Hi there, Mandalore the Esquire here, and thank you for tuning into Tales, Legends, and Theories on the Go. This episode will be part two of perhaps five or six regarding a discussion about how to bring Galen Merrick, otherwise known as the Starkiller, from the Force Unleashed 1 and 2 video games, Legends video games. We're going to find a way to bring him in into the new canon. Dave Filoni has gone on record saying that he has contemplated ways of bringing Starkiller into the new canon, and even though that has not yet happened, obviously, I think the story is not over. I think that Dave Filoni and the powers that be are still holding out on some possibility of bringing him in. And what we're going to do, essentially over the next five episodes, is talk about who Starkiller is, how exactly has Dave Filoni laid the foundation for his existence in the new Disney canon, and then talk about what exactly we can expect to see. So, in the previous episode, which I highly recommend you see, I highly recommend you listen to, is The Secrets of Mortis, Part 1, Overlords, and the Altar of Mortis. That is two episodes back, so I highly recommend you give that a quick skim. Essentially, this is a brief read-through of the Mortis arc from the Clone Wars TV show, and it is my belief that this arc is going to be very, very instrumental in our understanding of Dave Filoni's plans to bring Starkiller into the new canon. So what we're going to do is continue our read-through of the Clone Wars TV show Mortis arc, take a brief intermission, and then talk a bit more about why the Mortis beings are important in the context of the new canon, and why they are important when trying to come up with a way to bring Starkiller back into the new canon. All right, now, here we go. Episode 17, Season 7 of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Episode, Ghosts of Mortis. While Ahsoka attempts to repair the damaged shuttle for their escape from Mortis, Anakin and Obi-Wan contemplate whether this is the right course of action, with Sun, corrupted by the dark side, still being at large. Anakin decides to return to Father and seek his help, since he has doubts that Sun can be held prisoner on this planet permanently, and meets with them outside the crypt where Father has just buried Daughter, the dagger of Mortis laid upon her chest. Father is now determined to eliminate Sun and the danger he poses to the universe, but refuses to accept Anakin's offer of aid, since Sun would easily use Anakin's power to tip the balance of the Force, wreaking havoc in the galaxy. He tells Anakin that the Force will now decide over their fates, and to look inside himself for the answer for what is to be done. When he leaves the crypt, Anakin encounters a ghostly apparition of his first Jedi mentor, Qui-Gon Jinn. Still doubtful about what to do with Sun, Anakin seeks Qui-Gon's advice, but just like Father, Qui-Gon advises him to look into himself for the true answer, and tells him to go to a certain place, the Well of the Dark Side, to face his most personal challenge. In the meantime, Obi-Wan prepares to look for Anakin when he is met by Father, who tells him of Anakin's destination, but tells him not to interfere. Obi-Wan protests, however, and departs for the well. Anakin descends into the well, which lies hidden in the fiery bowels of Mortis, where he is met by Sun. Sun attempts to draw him to the dark side by revealing terrible visions of the future. Fearful, Anakin refuses to confront the images and is overwhelmed by anguish. The Sun offers to help him change the future and prevent what Anakin has seen, and Anakin chooses to go with him. When Obi-Wan arrives a short time later, he finds Anakin poisoned by the dark side and in Sun's company. He uses the Force to push Obi-Wan's speeder into the dangerous lava. The Sun and Anakin then depart, leaving Obi-Wan behind. Obi-Wan contacts Ahsoka, instructing her to disable the shuttle just right after she has managed to repair it. But before she can go about the task, Anakin arrives. Just in time, Ahsoka manages to sabotage the power systems, get away, and recover Obi-Wan. Worried that the two will join forces with Father, Sun departs to prevent this. and enters his sister's tomb, recovering the dagger of Mortis. Left alone, Anakin is confronted and questioned by Father. Anakin maintains that he will cause great suffering in the future. Father erases Anakin's memory of his future to break the hold of the dark side on him, and the two are rejoined by Obi-Wan and Ahsoka at the monastery. Son arrives soon afterwards, and the father pleads with him one last time to let go of his plans. When the son refuses to give up, Anakin attacks him, shortly followed by his friends. But the son proves too powerful for all of them. In order to strip his son of the force which he has bestowed upon him, Father takes the dagger of Mortis and turns it upon himself. Shaken by remorse, Son recovers and makes peace with his father just before he is run through by Anakin's lightsaber. With his dying breath, Father proclaims Anakin the Chosen One, since he has brought balance back to this world, and promises that he will do it again. But he warns him to beware his inner self, or else he will bring doom to the galaxy. And with that, the father vanishes. With the death of the father, the force which has permeated Mortis dissipates, and a falling crystal shatters on the tip of the monastery's tower, enveloping the three Jedi with a blinding flash. When they come to, they find themselves back in the space inside the shuttle and being contacted by Rex. They are confused to learn that only a moment has passed since they lost contact with their cruiser, but they recover sufficiently enough to complete their rendezvous. So that was Ghosts of Mortis, and that was the final episode of the Mortis arc in Star Wars The Clone Wars. The Mortis beings make a brief appearance in the Star Wars Rebels TV show. They don't make a physical appearance, but they are referenced, their image is shown to us, and their importance in the Star Wars galaxy and meta context is definitely referenced. So we will do a brief overview of that reference in a bit. But before that, I would like to do what I did in the previous episode and just give you some notes that I would like you to be aware of before we continue to proceed. Proceed trying to find a way to bring in Starkiller into the new canon. And it's not just that. We're not also trying to find a way to bring Starkiller into the new canon, but I am also proposing that this is probably going to be the principal vehicle by which Starkiller will be brought into the new canon. It is a justification for his existence in the first place. Because if you remember, if you play The Force Unleashed 1 and 2, particularly the second one was just kind of there because Lucasfilm, LucasArts realized they had a moneymaker on their hands. I would posit. But the first one, Starkiller just came out of nowhere. He was an immensely powerful force being. He was a child that Darth Vader found in Kashyyyk. He just appeared. He just existed. And fast forward later, 18 years later, oh, you are my apprentice. You will now destroy the remaining Jedi and bring me their lightsabers, and then we'll take on the Emperor. It's a very interesting concept, and we'll talk about it more in the next episode where we talk about Galen Merrick. But it just seemed there was not much justification. There was not much to justify the existence of Starkiller in the first place, especially if his existence threatens the concept of Anakin being the Chosen One and him being, by implication, the most powerful force being, like, in the galaxy. So all this, what we've been doing this last episode and now, is just building the foundation, building the reason why Starkiller must exist. So with that mini tirade out of the way, let me just give you my notes. The most important thing about this particular episode of the Mortis arc is not what you see on the screen, but what happens behind the scenes. Similar to what I told you about the first episode of the Mortis arc, that being Overlords, what I found very important about that episode is that Dave Filoni brought in voice actors who played who voice acted in a Star Wars Legends video game. This is especially true in the case of Sam Witwer, who was Galen Merrick, the Starkiller himself. Similarly, in this episode, Legends continuity is, well, it was implicated. You may or may not know that at some point in this episode, the son was supposed to be consulted by two Sith Lords, two well-known Sith Lords in Legends continuity, and two Sith Lords, the same Sith Lords, who are beginning to make their slow reintroduction into the new canon, albeit with some tinkering. These Sith Lords are Darth Bane, the person who began the Rule of Two, and Darth Revan. We just can't seem to get away from Darth Revan, can we? Nor do I want to. He is arguably my favorite character in Star Wars. These two Sith Lords were supposed to make an appearance in the form of Force Ghosts. That was the intention of Dave Filoni and most of the writers in the Clone Wars, but it was vetoed very, very late into production by George Lucas himself, who I don't think he removed the Sith Lords because he disagreed with the concept of them, per se. I think he removed them because he didn't like the concept of Sith Lords being able to use the technique that Obi-Wan and Luke and Leia and Yoda and Anakin would later use in episode, Return of the Jedi, and therefrom the ability to turn into Force Ghost is what I'm trying to say. The ability to turn into Force Ghost is reserved mostly for those who have an inclination towards the light, or to those who turn towards the light. It is reserved to the particularly powerful force beings who have an inclination towards the light, and that is simply not the case with Bane and apparently Darth Revan. I believe that in Knights of the Old Republic, the canon ending is the good one, but for some reason he was to make an appearance as his evil self, regardless of what was going on through, regardless of Dave Filoni's justification for keeping Darth Revan a Sith Lord. Point is, again, Dave Filoni, the writing team, the powers that be at the time this episode was made, were looking to Legends. Legends, even though its continuity was questioned at this time and is full-on non-existent at this time, Legends played a very important part in the making of this episode and, frankly, this entire arc, just based on what we've seen about the writer's notes. So, yeah, no, that's basically it. Dave Filoni was thinking about Revan and Bane, who were non-canon at the time. He, two episodes before, he brought in Sam Witwer, who played a Legends character, to play the son. So I'm pretty sure that is going to be important in and of itself when it comes to this argument, this proposal that Dave Filoni has thought about and continues to desire to bring Starkiller into the new canon. All right, so with that said and those notes out of the way, let's briefly discuss the reappearance of the Mortis beings in Star Wars Rebels. The Mortis beings make a brief reappearance in the new Disney canon by way of episode 12 and 13 in season 4 of Star Wars Rebels. The titles of those episodes respectively are Wolves and a Door and A World Between Worlds. Now, if you have been keeping up with Star Wars Rebels and are mostly generally aware of Disney canon, of the direction it's been going, you either very much love these two episodes or you absolutely hate them. I, for one, love them. I think it just creates more, it adds more pieces to the puzzle of the Filoniverse. I just saw recently that there's now this thing called the Filoniverse that people, like, they distinguish it from the remainder of Star Wars. It is a important part of Star Wars and is a well-loved part of Star Wars, but it's distinguishable. And it's important to the rest of the Star Wars context. But anyway, these two episodes, you either really much love them or you really hate them, given their impact in the Filoniverse and the greater Star Wars context, at least as it pertains to the new Disney canon. In the 12th episode of season 4, Wolves in a Door, we see the image of the Mortis beings. Ezra and Sabine Wren are on Lothal. Kanan Jarrus had just passed away. And the Emperor, Palpatine, he senses a disturbance of the Force. He senses that with the passing of Kanan Jarrus, the fate of Lothal has been altered somehow. And for some reason, he believes that the Jedi Temple on Lothal, what is within the temple, may hold the secrets to how the fate of Lothal and perhaps the rest of the Star Wars galaxy from there on is affected. So the Emperor calls upon he calls for an Imperial archaeological excavation of the Jedi Temple and Lothal. And he wants them to recover the contents of everything in the temple, to uncover its secrets. And he just wants to find a way within the temple, because it's clear that the temple is only accessible to those invited by the temple. So Ezra and Sabine Wren are two main primary protagonists for this particular episode. They go to the temple, and while going around the temple, they notice the images of the father, the son, and the daughter. Besides that, there seems to be no apparent entrance into the temple, and what happens is Ezra looks at the image of the daughter and notices the Convor. You remember that from the previous episode? The Convor is the parrot-owl hybrid, beautiful bird that accompanies the daughter wherever she goes when she was alive. And after her passing, that creature, the Convor, seems to accompany Ahsoka everywhere, given the implication that Ahsoka either is the new personification of the daughter, or at least is acting in a representative capacity of the daughter. Regardless, the Ahsoka and the daughter are somewhat connected. On top of that, in the image are pictures of Loth wolves, and upon using the Force to influence the painting, he notices that the lines on the image of the Mortis beings acted as a sort of map, a planetary, as a star map. And having used the Force, the lines on the painting begin to change, to form, to become alive, if you will. And eventually, the lines and the rings, they all line up together, and the Mortis beings, the images of the Mortis beings, also seem to come alive and change form. From that, the Loth wolves in the image also come to life, and they take Ezra to another side of the temple, so somewhat of a hidden side. Again, there doesn't seem to be any entrance into the temple. However, the images of the Loth wolves begin to circle around real quickly in the shape of a circle. Eventually, the shape becomes the outline of a doorway, and soon enough, it becomes a doorway within the temple. ¶¶ With the doorway to the temple now open, Ezra goes through the doorway and, well, he enters the temple, but he also seems to enter a place between places, a place between worlds, a place between timelines. That's right. This is where the controversy comes in. This is where people began to jump ship from the Star Wars Disney canon. There is a stigma in science fiction that once you introduce the concept of time travel, that means you've written yourself into a corner and you don't know where to go. So you need to implicate a multiverse slash timeline, time travel, that sort of stuff. I don't think we need to be worried. I don't think the Dave Filoni, George Lucas, the powers that be, the writers of the new Disney canon, I don't think they've written themselves into a corner. I think this is just the laying of a foundation for the future of Star Wars, and if you want to call it that way, it's the laying of the foundation for the rest of the Filoniverse. And if you see my most recent episode about the Mandalorian Season 2, you'll see that you'll know for a fact that Dave Filoni has had, he and Jon Favreau, they've both been working on that, and there seems to be word of a Ahsoka spinoff, an Ezra spinoff, a Bo-Katan spinoff. The Filoniverse is well underway, so I feel like this is just laying the foundation for either those shows or the next step of the Filoniverse. And as I'm about to pause it in this episode, and again in the next few episodes, this could be the foundation for how Starkiller can be brought in. And at the very least, if this if the World Between Worlds is not how Starkiller may be brought in, it still goes to show the overall power of the Mortis beings. And that in and of itself is relevant to our discussion of Starkiller. So Ezra is in this World Between Worlds. He sees other gateways within this World Between Worlds, much similar to the one he just entered. What he notices is that some of them are locked away. One of them is not locked from him. In the portal that appears in front of him, that opens in front of him, he sees Ahsoka fighting for her life in the Malachor Sith Temple, barely holding off Darth Vader. In an earlier episode, we see Darth Vader and Ahsoka duke it out in the Malachor Sith Temple, and at the end of that episode, we see only Darth Vader survives. However, as we will now learn, Ezra reaches out and saves Ahsoka from her demise, and the Sith Temple Malachor collapses. She survives. This Ahsoka is from a year ago. She hardly recognizes Ezra. In fact, he looks completely different. And long story short, Ezra tries to take her out of the World Between Worlds. She says, "No, I need to go back to my timeline." At that point, another portal opens, and the Emperor, appearing from that portal, tries to bring in Ezra and Ahsoka. However, Ahsoka saves them, and Ahsoka goes back to her timeline, and Ezra goes back into his. The thing, though, is that Ahsoka reappears in the Sith Malachor Temple. It is destroyed, but she appears. She is saved from Darth Vader, and she is once again met with the Morai, the Convor, the parrot slash owl creature that I keep on referring to, that is very, very closely tied to the daughter. So everything we just saw is not only related to the Mortis beings by implication, but it is being observed, I would posit, by the daughter herself, and is just part of the destiny of our protagonist. And it is just another cornerstone in the greater Star Wars story. thank you to everyone who's made it this far into this, my first and so far biggest theory on this channel. I was looking back several weeks ago when I put out my first episode, when I put out the incoming transmission episode regarding this theory, I was looking back and I was just looking at the analytics, and I told myself if this was something that not a lot of people were interested in, then we'll just cut it short. We'll probably make it two or three episodes, or we will not go that far into detail. That hesitation was quickly subsided when I looked at everything and I listened to the feedback from friends, family, and loved ones, and it appears clear that this is an interesting topic, a topic that many would like to have discussed. And fact of the matter is, a lot of us know Starkiller as he appeared in The Force Unleashed. He is someone that we've wanted back into the new canon. He is someone that we know for a fact Dave Filoni wants to bring into the new canon. So by golly, what I set out to do, and I'm glad that so many of you have been supportive of this idea, is to find a way to bring him in. And if we're lucky, maybe we correctly guess how Filoni may want to bring Starkiller into the new canon. All that aside, I would just like to briefly summarize what has been discussed these last two episodes, in case you've been jumping around, or if you started off with this episode, in which case, it is no problem at all. Regardless, it is the last thing I would like you to take before we begin discussing who Starkiller was as we knew him in the Legends continuity. The Mortis beings are the father, the son, the daughter. They represent balance in the Force, the dark side of the Force, and the light side of the Force, respectively. They are incredibly powerful beings, so powerful that they have a seemingly unending mastery over the Force and the Star Wars universe, such that they can invoke some unfathomable powers, unfathomable concepts, such as time travel, stuff that would normally piss off any ardent fans of a sci-fi, space odyssey fan base. Once you bring in time travel, it's like an alarm bell goes off. But I think the way it was done here was beautiful, and it can be useful later. Regardless, it shows you the extent of the Mortis beings' power. We know for a fact that the Mortis beings, at least two of them, have corporeal counterparts. The father, who represents balance, is represented by Anakin, who brought balance to the Force when he killed Palpatine by throwing him down the reactor chute in the second Death Star, leading to the Emperor's first demise and bringing balance to the Force. The daughter, who represents light, we know that, we have a lot of circumstantial evidence, strong circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial is not synonymous with weak. It can be strong in light of the circumstances. There is a lot of circumstantial evidence that the daughter is represented by Ahsoka. We know this because the daughter just seems to always be on Ahsoka's side, even in death. The daughter literally poured what remained of her life force into Ahsoka so that Ahsoka may live on and continue. And even though a lot of people thought Ahsoka would not survive beyond Clone Wars and would explain a lot of Anakin's angst in episode 3 and his sudden turn to the dark side, she's still alive and she's ticking, and it seemed like she may well survive into at least the beginning of the sequel era of Star Wars. And that is all because of the daughter, because the daughter wants her life. On top of that, the daughter, let's back up. The daughter is represented by Mirai, which is a Convor. Again, it's a parrot owl creature that always accompanies the daughter. Even when the daughter died, the Mirai accompanied Ahsoka for the remainder of her life. It accompanied her at the end of season 7 of Star Wars The Clone Wars. It accompanied her when Ahsoka grew older and finally met Ezra. And it accompanied Ahsoka when she barely escaped her death by the hands of Darth Vader when she entered the world between worlds. From there, we saw that the Mirai, and I think by proxy, the daughter, has been with Ahsoka. She's been looking over Ahsoka for the rest of her life, the greater part of her life. And that leads me to believe that Ahsoka has a very important role to play. Why? It begs the question, why is the daughter, why is a Mortis being or the Mortis beings looking after her? We still don't have an answer yet, because we know it's almost guaranteed that Rosario Dawson's going to play Ahsoka in The Mandalorian. I think more of anything, she will play a cameo. I don't think she's going to play that big of a role in The Mandalorian unless they somehow bring in when they implicate the search for Ezra in The Mandalorian. I highly doubt that. But the fact of the matter is, Ahsoka's story has not ended, and it is because the daughter, time and time again, has willed it to be so. Lastly, we have the son. He has no known corporeal avatar Star Wars in the new Disney canon yet. The theory I am positing is that Starkiller is the son's avatar. We just have not seen Starkiller yet. The daughter is a daughter figure to the father. Ahsoka is a daughter figure to Anakin, I would posit, much more so than a sibling. I think their relationship is more akin to a father-daughter one than it is to a brother-sister one. So that begs the question, who can serve as a corporeal avatar to the son and also be a son-like figure to Anakin? No one in the current Disney canon fits that description. But if we look over to Legends, as we know that Dave Filoni has done time and time again, we have a glaringly apparent answer. That is Gala Merrick, the Starkiller. Last thing I want you to take note again is what I just mentioned, that Dave Filoni, we know for a fact that he's been consulting Legends. He's been looking for ways to reincorporate Legends into the new canon, and I am, as I've said time and time again, I'm pretty sure he's trying to bring in Starkiller. We know he consulted Legends when he made the Mortis Beings episodes in The Clone Wars. The Mortis Beings are not original to Disney canon. They were not original to George Lucas. Those were all products. Those all made their first appearances in Legends. It's taken straight out of Legends and adapted for the purposes of George Lucas's story, for his prequel story and the new Disney canon as it chose to adopt the Clone Wars into the canon when it struck out everything, all other media and Star Wars, when Disney acquired Star Wars. It chose to keep Clone Wars alive, so it's still important. It is still part of the new canon, even though it brings in concepts from Legends. We know that Dave consulted Legends when he, behind the scenes, wanted to incorporate Bane, Darth Bane, and Darth Revan into the Ghost of Mortis episode. We know, just again circumstantially, that Dave he may have consulted Legends when he chose the voice actors for the son and the daughter, given that they had played Legends characters in other Star Wars media in the past. The most important, respectfully to Adrian, who played the daughter, with respect to her, the most important individual, the most important voice actor, the one that we must take note of, is Sam Witwer, who was Starkiller. And we know for a fact that Dave Filoni attempted to bring Starkiller into Rebels by making him an Inquisitor. We will discuss this in the next episode, but he wanted to make him an Inquisitor to a somewhat of an analog to the role he played in Force Unleashed. It just didn't fit in that context. And I don't think the story's over. I think there are still ways to bring him in. I think he will be brought in, and we will discuss that right after we discuss exactly who Starkiller was and why exactly should this badass be brought back into Disney canon. So with that, I am going to end this episode. I want to thank you all for sticking this long into the theory, into me setting up the foundation. At the very least, I hope you enjoyed the tales of the Mortis beings. They are by far the most interesting, in my opinion. They are one of the most interesting parts of the Disney canon. They really stick out. Many people, they don't know what to do with the Mortis beings, and they do kind of seem to stick out. However, I think, as George Lucas says, the thing about Star Wars is that everything, it's like a poem. It rhymes. If it's brought up once, it's going to be brought up again, either in the past or in the future. In terms of the Star Wars chronology, it's important. Everything you see is important. So this is not the end. We're going to know why the daughter insists on keeping Ahsoka alive. We're going to know why the father wanted to make an Anakin his avatar, and the daughter wanted to make Ahsoka her avatar. And we're going to find out who is the son's avatar. And I think we found it. All right. Thank you so much. Take care. And may the Force be with you always.